This hour of the Jason Rand Show is brought to you by You Build It. There is a lot of news happening all around the world and right here at home. So, let's find out what's trending.
What's trending in Seattle?
Seattle School Superintendent Denise Juno wants to get rid of AP courses, or Seattle's version of AP courses, because she thinks it's racist. It's funny, because last week the big story was whether or not math is racist in Seattle. Apparently it is. But now AP-style courses are racist. She said, in part, none of us should want to lead this type of educational redlining, which either indicates she doesn't actually know what the term redlining means, or she is certifiably insane. Now, the argument is this. Two-thirds of the kids who are in these courses in Seattle schools are white. But instead of addressing why so few Black or Latino students are not making it into these courses, they want to stop white kids from advancing. This is a perfect example, the epitome of how progressives see the world. This is their worldview on display. They don't want to help Black or Latinos succeed. They want to stop white kids from succeeding. She spoke at a meeting recently that KNKX Radio picked up, and she talks about the racial disproportionality in Seattle schools, particularly at Garfield High School.
I heard that the students there called it the slave ship or apartheid high.
Those students are not bright. Just FYI.
Since that time, I have learned that this is a generational legacy. This program segregation has been endorsed by this district for generations.
She's saying that it is program segregation, that it is intentional, that someone is intentionally keeping Black and brown students from going into these AP courses while giving preference to whites. There's no evidence that suggests that's true.
This is unacceptable and embarrassing.
And a lie.
None of us should want to lead this type of educational redlining.
Progressives do not believe in equal opportunity. You know, they talk about it. They talk about equality. They don't actually believe in it. They believe in equal outcome. And there's a huge difference between equal opportunity and equal outcome. People in this city, in this state, in this country have equal opportunities to get into an AP course. But not everyone is going to get into an AP course. Now, there are some legitimate reasons, like just it turns out that the kids who took the testing or who were enrolled at the time just were not able to intellectually cut it. Then the question becomes, well, why? I suppose in some cases you can say institutionalized racism. And that's what they'll say. They won't actually tell me who is in the institution that is racist. They won't actually tell me the teacher who is keeping Black students back or Latino students back. They won't ever do that. They just say institutionalized racism. It's from legacies. Okay, could you point to the person who's responsible right now? Oh no, okay. And at the core of what it is they're really saying, what Denise Juno is saying here, she doesn't believe African American kids or Latino kids are as smart as white kids or Asian kids. That's what she's saying. And so she wants to slow the white kids down. I think every single person, regardless of their skin color, is capable of being smart enough for an AP course. I guess that's controversial. I personally don't think that's controversial. I hope no one out there thinks I'm being controversial here. I think a Black student and a Latino student and an Asian student and a white student and a Native American student, and literally any student, is capable of qualifying for an AP course. She doesn't. And because she doesn't like the data that's being put out there, she doesn't need any proof that there's racism. She just needs to see that white students are disproportionately doing better than Black students to know that something's wrong without actually addressing what's wrong. This is dangerous thinking, and this is what's happening to your kids in Seattle schools. And I can hear in my head, I can literally hear someone who's listening right now. Maybe you're in your car on the ride home to Monroe or Mukilteo or Olympia or Bend, North Bend. And I can hear you saying, thank God my kids don't go to a school in Seattle. Oh, we are so lucky. Before you get too comfortable, understand that bad policies of Seattle spread. They spread to North Bend. They spread to Monroe. They spread to Covington. They spread to Tacoma. They spread to Bellingham. They spread absolutely everywhere. And that's why this is so important. And if you don't help me put a spotlight on this nonsense, understand, you should not be shocked when all of a sudden the school district you live in Edmonds is going to push this same nonsense. Let's find out what else is trending.
What's trending? Let's get political.
So the first day of Washington State's new ban on flavored vape products, which is absolutely political, and it's purely political, is now in effect. It went into effect yesterday, and vape shops here in the Washington state, in all of Washington state, they're already in trouble because you've taken away the majority of their products.
Overnight, this happened, which is going to greatly impact our income. So we're not sure. We're trying to figure out our options, how to completely not go bankrupt, only leaving tobacco, which I would say is probably 4% of what we sell. If that.
She's expected to survive with 4% of what she sells, thanks to this move to ban vape products that are flavored, without any actual data to suggest that when Governor Jay Inslee says, oh, you know, these companies, they're purposefully targeting 12-year-olds to addict. It's all purpose. It's all being done on purpose. They're just evil. Yeah, no. Daniel Moriarty, a customer, say Moriarty fast four times, spoke to Q13. He's shocked when he went into a vape shop and saw empty shelves.
I walked in and I was just going to get one of these vapes, but I guess they're illegal today, so I'm not sure what I'm going to do. It was full. I live right across the street, and it's been full. I come in here like once a week or so, and this is kind of weird. It kind of took me off guard here with it. The selection is very, very slim.
Just real quick, Producer Peyton, was Daniel a 12-year-old boy in that shop purchasing the flavored stuff? No?
You know, he was not a 12-year-old boy.
Are you sure? Because maybe he just looked very mature but was really 12.
No, he didn't look like a 12-year-old at all. He kind of, yeah, he was bald with a beard.
Oh.
I haven't seen a bald 12-year-old with a beard lately.
Well, we are getting close to Halloween. Is it possible? Just saying.
Yeah, I don't think so.
Is this a costume? Okay. I will take you at your word, but understand that I've been told we have nothing but 12-year-olds who are going into these shops and purchasing the flavored vape products. Because only kids like flavors. Adults don't. Only kids. Now, even though we're told, by the way, how vaping products are dangerous and are getting kids to become addicted, guess what? Tribal shops are exempt from this law. So I suppose that if you are a Native American-owned shop, people like Jay Inslee want to target you to become addicts? Okay. Morgan Rowland, customer who's nearby, thinks tribal smoke shops will gain a whole lot more business telling Como.
I think they'll definitely get a lot more business. A lot more business, especially if people know about it.
So what you've actually done here, you've given these companies that are being exempt because we're not consistent in the state of Washington, you're giving them unfair advantage over shops like the one that Rob owns, which is near JBLM.
They can sell to 18 to 20, and they're right by the base. So it's concerning to me. I feel like they should have to go by state laws.
They should, but they don't have to here. And as a result, Johnson's getting ready basically to go out of business.
I'm going to continue to send e-liquid and flavored e-liquid into Washington State. And how's that affecting me as a retail store? I mean, it's just going to put me out of business.
Yeah. But Jay Inslee doesn't care. Democrats who push for this and some Republicans who push for this, they don't care. And of course, they're inconsistent because they won't go after flavored vodkas or beers. Why? Why is that? Oh, because they're inconsistent. 1-800-465-877 if you want to send me a text on the None Better Tax Resolution Hotline. 1-800-465-877. If you don't have the KTH smartphone app, do yourself a favor and just download it. When there's breaking news, any interesting guests, we will send you an alert so you can listen to it, get that reminder. And if you're not in the car at some point, if you've got some static issues, you can stream every moment of every day of KTTH on your phone. Text the keyword app to 1-800-465-8770 or go to your smartphone's app store. Let's find out what else is trending.
What's trending at the movies?
It's Friday. You know what that means? It means I get to talk movies thanks to our wonderful sponsor, Alpine Specialty Cleaning at alpineclean.com. Gemini Man is out now. It's the big movie release of the weekend. It's about an aging government assassin played by Will Smith. He's ready for retirement, but he knows too much. So the ones he once worked for are now out to silence him. And by silence him, I mean kill him. And the only assassin that can take him on is his younger self, a clone.
25 years ago, your father took my blood and he cloned me. He made you from me. He chose me because there's never been anybody like me. And he knew one day I was going to get old and then you'd step in. He's been lying to you the whole time. He told you you were an orphan. And of all the people in the world to come after me, why would he send you? Because I'm the best. You are obviously not the best.
This movie is extraordinarily bad. It is not good. This is a very bad movie. For starters, the plot makes very, very little sense. At times, there are scenes that are laughably bad and superfluous and nonsensical. It follows the twists and turns of almost every other similar movie that was made before. There is very little originality to this movie. No character in Gemini Man is particularly interesting or deep, which is really hard to believe in a movie about facing off against your clone. It feels like there is a lot of good material here, especially for a director like Ang Lee to work from. Will Smith, who is normally very charming, is not at all in this movie. There is so much more to be done in this film, and yet almost none of it gets approached. Now let's talk about the technology, because there are a lot of folks pointing out that there is some potentially movie-altering technology that's at work here. Director Ang Lee apparently spent a lot of money on the technology for this budget, and he should never be given a budget for this nonsense again. Sorry, the film looks like a bad video game when the younger Will Smith character is on screen. It's just not good. Not only does he look computer-generated, but the voice doesn't actually match the movement of his lips. On a bigger screen, it almost looks like it's sort of off by about a half second or so. And the action sequences aren't any better. There are a couple of interesting moments, I do think. But again, the technology I found to be a distraction because of how bad it looks. Everything about Gemini Man is bad. This is one of the worst movies I've seen this year. So if you feel like I'm being very harsh, it's because this movie deserves a harsh review. It is not good. Do not see it this weekend. It is not worth your time or your energy. There are much better movies that are still out right now that you can go check out. What movie are you going to see? Send me a text, 1-800-465-8770. Send me a text. Tell me what you're going to see this weekend on the Numb Better Tax Resolution Hotline. Maybe you will just see season one of The Politician, which is out right now on Netflix. I actually like that. In fact, coming up at 5:30, we're going to be joined in studio by two of the co-stars of the film, slash movie, slash long-form TV show, slash Netflix stream, The Politician, coming up at 5:30. But until then, let's find out what else is trending.
What's trending in the media?
So The View's Anna Navarro, someone who pretends to be a Republican in order to get work on TV, she yelled at Senator Rand Paul and accused him of mansplaining because she didn't like his opinion, although his opinion wasn't really opinion. It was fact. His fact that she's treating as opinion is not controversial. Socialists promote socialism. Venezuelan President Nicolas Maduro is a socialist. She's mad. She doesn't want to give socialism a bad name, which, again, remember, she's pretending to be a Republican. And she yelled at Rand Paul multiple times. And we're pretending that she's the victim.
Donald Trump has tweeted this. Many have tweeted this. If you vote for Democrat, they will turn the United States into Venezuela. Do you think that's a fair statement to make?
Well, if you vote for a socialist, you might get socialism.
Come on, don't do that. Maduro is not a socialist. He's a corrupt, murderous thug who is starving his people.
Okay, so her position, understand she's saying he can't be a corrupt, murderous thug and also be a socialist. That's her position. That they are mutually exclusive. You can either be corrupt, murderous, whatever else she said. She had a long
vicious
list.
Thug.
Vicious, blah, blah, thug. Or he can be a socialist.
Look, the thug part, that's a new political party. You didn't know?
He doesn't need a new political party. He's an actual socialist.
That's not true.
Maduro's not a thug and a murderer who's starving his people.
Let's have a conversation here. Chavez was a socialist, and socialism was the economic system
of
Venezuela.
Stole. It's a kleptocracy. It's not socialism.
But here's the question is, they voted for socialism. They voted for, let me finish.
No, I can't let you finish. If you're going to say Maduro's not a murderer, he's a damn lie.
Don't mansplain to me by telling me a fact. His literal party is the United Socialist Party of Venezuela. That is his actual political party. He is a socialist. And what Rand Paul was trying to do, despite the fact that she refused to let him actually answer a question, is to say, yes, he is a criminal, violent thug who's corrupt. He is also a socialist. This is the Republican Ana Navarro. Now, if you thought that wouldn't be just enough, there were more fireworks. Another ridiculous point was made by Sonny Hostin, the other co-host.
And the middle class.
So we have massive taxes here, but we don't get any free stuff. We don't have free health care. Our public education system.
So, okay, obviously she's wrong. She's 100% incorrect. In fact, when you say you're not getting anything for free despite high taxes and then say public school, which is free, you're kind of hitting at your own point, but let's let her finish.
Some is the problem. It seems like the only people that get free stuff are the very, very wealthy.
We have a different form of taxation in our country. Ours is much more progressive. So we've taken the poor off of the rolls. They don't pay income tax anymore. Most people below $50,000 don't pay any income tax. The top 1% in our country pay 40%.
Our audience says that's not true.
Well, your audience isn't very bright then. What he's saying is a verifiable fact. This is not, again, this is not opinion.
The IRS statistics say that the top 1% in our country pay 40% of the income tax, and that those making less than $50,000...
Donald Trump doesn't pay any income tax.
Let me ask you this.
Now, play the traffic. I just can't anymore. No more view stories. No more view audio. It's banned. Until Monday, there's more dumb audio that I'll put on the show. I just can't anymore.
We can ban it.
Oh, my God. What she says is just, it's verifiably untrue. Welcome back to the Jason Rand Show. The Politician is a great show. It's on Netflix, and I'm joined in studio with two of the co-stars, Laura Dreyfus and Ronnie Jones. Thank you so much for coming on.
Thanks for having us.
So this is one of those shows where I suppose I could succinctly explain what it is, but I feel like I can be leaving much of what the show is actually about out. At its surface, it's about a young would-be politician. He wants to be president of the United States, but it's not really just about him. It's about sort of this large group of people who are like weirdly passionate about adult things.
Right. Yeah.
How do you pitch the show?
I guess, like you said, this kid who's always wanted to be president, you know, and is now running for his high school student body election to be president. And mm-hmm. I think it's more so about the interpersonal relationships more than anything else. You have, you know, campaign advisors, and then you have opponents or would-be opponents kind of, you know, doing their thing mm-hmm. and being conniving, and they're 40-year-old, 17-year-olds. That's
exactly.
What we say. Yeah.
Well, and that's not easy to pull off all the time, right? It's this, it could come off as so out there that it's not believable. And yet with the characters, I weirdly believe that you're as ambitious as you guys all are.
Yeah. I think the fun thing as an actor is to just really live in the honesty of it all. And mm-hmm. I think what makes it so funny is that these people are so serious about everything that they're doing. And then the comedy kind of lives with the extreme, the, the,
yeah, the satirical aspect of it is the fact that they are these children who think that this is the end-all be-all mm-hmm. and the stepping stone to, you know, something bigger.
Well, what I love about the satirical aspect of it is you guys are kind of satirizing a lot of stuff. Mm-hmm. And you're not just going after one particular target. Mm-hmm. And so someone, because it is called The Politician, one might think it might be political. And from a political sort of social commentary standpoint, kind of going after a lot of different aspects.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, Ryan Murphy somehow predicted the college admission scandal, and
yeah, that was wild.
So it's amazing because it's not just like about politics, but it's like a social commentary as well. Mm-hmm.
So how much, Ronnie, did you get to know about the character and the background and what drives your character? We don't want to give anything away, mm-hmm. as there are lots of twists in the show. But you start off clearly as you are the vice presidential candidate for the side going against the main character. Mm-hmm. Do you go into that role and they tell you, okay, this is kind of what's motivating you? Or do you come up with that on your own in the context of the script?
I mean, there's no sit down to say, like, this is what Sky's motivation is, especially considering how we got the scripts. We would get them maybe a week or so before we would actually mm-hmm. shoot. So each time I'd see a script, it's like, oh,
you're making me do
so,
that.
Oh, so this is where we're going. And I think that Sky is just an activist, right? So it's easy to pull from, you know, things that are happening in the world and kind of using that as a catalyst for that type of motivation to mm-hmm. be, you know, this militant. I'll call it like it is. I'm willing to do any and everything to get what I want, type of thing. So
season one of The Politician, that's out right now on Netflix. How does it feel living in that sort of Netflix world where some significant differences between traditional television distribution?
It's really amazing. I think it's really cool to have, especially I come from a theater background, and it's made me really realize how, I hate to say it, but like elitist theater is, because it's only so many people can access mm-hmm. Tickets to a Broadway show. And even then it's like, you can only witness that one performance. So to be a part of a streaming service, like network, where you're a part of a show where everyone can access it. Yeah. It's really amazing. I mean, the fact that the whole world can see this show is really, really cool.
Are there any new pressures attached to that? And I say this as someone who, I got an email from Netflix, I want to say 2 or 3 weeks ago. Uh-huh. And it was asking me how I felt about every single major character on the show. Do I like them? Would I like to see them in number two? I believe both of you were on it. I gave you all very good marks. But when you get something
good to know.
Right.
Does that kind of make you nervous at all?
Well, now it does.
Now it does. Dang, I didn't know that. Just kidding.
But like, how much of that does sort of play a role? Because presumably it's all being driven on a TV station that similar ways, except it's just, it's really subjective, and it's the, mm-hmm. solely the creators. Maybe they do some lame focus groups that don't really mm-hmm. mean anything. But now people who actually love the show mm-hmm. get to say, we love you and we want more of you. And then that's the positive to it all.
Right.
Yeah.
I think that's interesting. I try to, like, stay
really
away.
Think about it. Yeah.
I try to stay away from comments. Specifically with Sky, I think that you either love her or you hate her. Mm-hmm. And so I was fully prepared for any type of negative backlash.
What are you getting?
A lot of positives. And then there's some people that are just like, oh my God, I hate Sky. She's so annoying. And I'm like, well, it is what it is. But I think that that's, you know, just the nature of, you know, creating something like mm-hmm. that. So, yeah.
How do you sort of like just cut that stuff out in a way that doesn't get in your head? And I'll be taking notes, because as a talk show host who talks for 3 hours a day,
yeah.
I inevitably say things that make people upset.
I think the most important thing is to recognize that it doesn't define you. I think that it's the art that you're doing, and like that is creating a response in people, which is mm-hmm. great, and everyone should have a response, mm-hmm. but you can control how much you allow it to affect you. And so I think it also doesn't serve the work that you do, because I don't know, it doesn't make you who you are. So
right.
as long as you know who you are.
Yeah. And have a sort of a healthy relationship with Twitter and Facebook and whatnot.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which is kind of funny, because I follow both of you on Twitter.
Oh.
Laura, you need to take us through the conversation you overheard coming into SeaTac last night.
I'm still recovering.
Take us through, because that was I do the same exact thing, and I always wonder if people are going to be mad at me for doing it. Everyone always loves it.
No, you know what? They were so loud that I didn't feel bad, because I wanted to sleep, and they just were talking so, like, even with my headphones in, mm-hmm. I heard their conversation. So I felt like they were proud. of what they were saying.
They were owning it. So you were live tweeting a conversation that you experienced on the plane. Take us through their fascination with fish, because I find this...
they talked about fish for an extremely long time. Yeah, they love fish, and that's actually when I fell asleep. when we were like minute 15 about fish. Yeah, I fell asleep.
Oh my gosh.
Passionate about fish.
Where was the flight coming in from?
From Phoenix to Seattle.
Okay, well then we're not taking ownership of these people.
No.
They're from Phoenix and they're visiting Seattle for
yes.
Right, okay. I know, Ronnie, you've probably been asked this a million times. Mm-hmm. However, I'm just fascinated with how you made the jump into your first project for Netflix and for TV, we'll put it in air quotes, coming from Homeland Security.
Homeland Security, that's like a DHS.
Okay, so what were you doing?
I was an inspector for the Office of Inspector General for DHS, which is the oversight body for the entire
What do you inspect?
We did a lot of reviews revolving around airports. So aviation security, border security, counterterrorism. Mm-hmm. So it's like this broad sense of like these reviews that we would get based on congressional requests or in-house initiated reviews. And it was rewarding work. I did it for about 4.5 years. And then was like, I'm good. I gotta go.
Yeah, I'm out.
Peace. But yeah, I love my DHS family. I'm still friends with a lot of people that are there. But it's definitely a far cry from.
So did you just? But how did you make that pathway then to acting?
You know, once I quit, I took about a year off to figure out what the next step was. I was like, I have made a grave error, and then then I moved to New York, and then I started doing community theater, and was my first introduction into actually performing. I've always loved watching other people do it. And then I was like, I love this. This is exhilarating. This is all something that I've always wanted to do, but was too afraid to try. And then, you know, the universe started to align to make things happen for me. And then I got this audition and I was just like, yay.
Well, it always seems like Ryan and his crew, they very much heavily rely on theatrical actors and actresses. And that was the case with Glee. Laura, same thing, case with you. And then there's, of course, your co-star who you were also a co-star with.
Yeah.
So when you make the jump from theatrics to theater to traditional TV, when you're working on a Ryan Murphy project, does it really feel like you're making that big of a jump? Because it does. The show feels theatrical.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that that's the beauty of it, is that you don't really feel like you have to dial yourself back too much, because the way Ryan works is that it really lends itself to a theatrical performance. Mm-hmm. So yeah, it's not like a typical TV show. You can have a lot of fun with it.
Do you enjoy that more than sort of a more traditional role?
I think every role has its perks, but I think it's really fun to have the freedom to exist in this world that is so out there.
And it feels like everyone has really good chemistry, and yet you're not really spending that much time together per episode. In fact, I your two characters, I don't think spent all that much time at all up until episode 4, maybe 5 for the most.
Yeah.
So how does that develop, that sort of chemistry? Is it just there?
I mean, I will say that Ben Platt did a phenomenal job of bringing us all together as a cast. We did a lot of like fun activities. We went to Disneyland, hung out with each other all the time. And so once we did have the opportunity to work with each other, it was just like already there. It's not like you're trying to introduce yourself to this new person. But I would give him the credit on, bringing us together and creating that chemistry for sure.
Yeah.
Once people go through the experience of season 1 of The Politician, what in your world should their takeaway be?
Oh gosh. I hope it's entertaining, and I hope that people are able to examine the world around them and have it be in a very digestible way. And I think that I think it really asks the question of what is authenticity.
Mm-hmm.
And I hope that people are able to look at their world leaders and examine why they're drawn to certain people. And I hope it makes young people more active in politics. I hope it makes young people more inspired to vote or understand the world that we're living in. And I think it's already happening. I think young people are really doing an incredible job and really picking up the slack. So I just want more of that. And I hope that it inspires change.
Yeah. And weirdly, one of my favorite episodes of the, it's 8, right?
Mm-hmm. So,
was the one where it explores almost exclusively one character who's brand new, who has no interest whatsoever in voting. And I just, because that was a departure from the storyline up until that point through the end. And same question for you, Ronnie. What do you want people to get out of this?
I would just, you know, echo what Laura was saying. I think that the timing of this show is so interesting considering it's an election year. And to really look at, you know, the politicians that are in the forefront and seeing that there is so much more that's going on behind the scenes than we know. And I also think that, as I was saying earlier, this is a world in terms of like representation and gender expression and sexuality that I feel should be the norm.
Mm-hmm.
And I want people to, you know, see that and say, huh, this is the world I live in and I'm cool with it.
Yeah.
Well, thank you for being part of a show that I actually enjoyed.
Yeah.
Because when I don't and I do the interviews, it's very awkward.
Okay.
And so I really love The Politician. Season 1 is out right now on Netflix. Check it out. Ronnie Jones, Laura Dreyfus, thank you so much for stopping by.
Thank you so much for having us.
Absolutely. You're listening to The Jason Rancho. Welcome back to The Jason Rancho on AM 770 KTTH and 94.5 FM on the Greater East Side. Whatcom County may see a potential ban on hunting in Drayton Harbor, driven in part by a citizen petition. It's a decision that ultimately is going to be made by the Whatcom County Council. Now, not everybody is happy, including our next guest. He's here to take us through his concerns. Matt Berry is with the Whatcom County Chapter of the Washington Waterfowl Association. Matt, thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you for having us.
So it sounds like the county council at this point, it was originally going through the Blaine City Council. They've pushed it to the county council. They're considering this ban in part because neighbors are concerned about their safety and some of the noise issues since this area where the hunting is going on is nearby.
Yes, and it's particularly driven by misinformation. A lot of the folks in the neighborhood, and there's only a few of them, that are concerned about safety, see it as we're out there with rifles, shooting high-powered rifles in the direction of their homes. They don't understand that the range of a shotgun's only about 100 yards, and the rules already in place put us about half a mile away from their homes. So we think it's mostly a noise issue, which is also moot because firearm noise in the course of hunting is protected. There's an exemption to maximum permissible environmental noise levels. So really, we really feel that it's just anti-hunters. In fact, the person who started this whole thing with the petition just moved up here from California, lived one season, hunting season in the area, heard shotgun noise, and started to fuss about it.
So take us through exactly what's so unique about Drayton Harbor for this kind of recreation? Because obviously part of the issue here is this is unique to hunters.
Yes. There's simply no or very few real sea duck hunting opportunities left in the Puget Sound. This area used to be just great for duck hunting, and especially sea duck hunting for kind of rare ducks like harlequins and scoters and mergansers and things like that. And due to urbanization, we've seen a lot of those areas grow up too much where hunters were pushed out. And in fact, in Whatcom County, there's already been established 22 other no-shooting zones. And when they tried to take away our last sea duck opportunity, we kind of were saying enough is enough. We're going to keep this. And we've got the Lummi tribes on our side, Swinomish tribe, Department of Fish and Wildlife. We have a lot of support here. We're just hoping we can convince the Whatcom County Council to let us continue to do this.
So when we talk about the folks who end up showing up for the hunting purposes, are these all folks or primarily folks who are in Whatcom County? Are we talking about people from, you know, Snohomish and King and Pierce who are making the drive up near the border because
people come from all over Western Washington to hunt this area? And that's why we're seeking petition signatures from folks all over and why we got in contact with you is because really, this is people come long distances to hunt this because there's just nowhere else to do this kind of hunting, really, in Washington State anymore.
So you brought up a point that I think is at least a valid discussion piece, regardless of how people feel about this particular, you know, topic. It's, you know, you're in areas that are becoming more densely populated. You've got urban growth, and that's going to have an impact in instances of hunting and instances of other sort of outdoor recreation. And so when you're looking at it big picture, you know, taking out your clear conflict in this, because you obviously want to keep the spot exactly where it is, where do you draw the line as far as the appropriateness of allowing that sort of sprawl to impact recreation?
Well, I mean, in Whatcom County, at least, we have a rule that there's no large caliber rifles or high powered rifles can be fired west of I-5 because that's where most of the development is in Whatcom County. Mm-hmm. Bellingham, Ferndale, Linden, Blaine. Well, Linden's on the east side, but no rifles on the west side of the highway. I think that's a great rule. You know, people can get hurt shooting long distances with no backstops, but we're talking about shotguns that have a very limited range. And the rules that are already in effect out in Drayton Harbor, we feel are sufficient enough. You're not allowed to fire a gun within essentially a half a mile of the shore. And so it creates a very small pocket in the center where people can actually hunt. They're still trying to take that away, even though science is on our side. We've given them the ballistics data, information on how loud it actually is. So I do think there are some common sense rules as far as no high-powered rifles in urban areas, but I do think in this case we can coexist with the current level of development. Maybe it won't be the same in 80 years, like the Blaine City Council saying, you know, our urban growth program means that we're going to start to see problems, but they budgeted out 80 years in advance. We can talk about it then, but for now, we'd like to continue to hunt this area.
What conversations have you had directly with the folks, other than this Californian who just moved to the area? What conversations have you had with the folks who have expressed their concern? Because I know you made the pitch to the council as best as you can, but what does everybody else say?
You mean proponents of the ban?
Yeah, supporters of the ban. The folks who are concerned, you say you've got science on your side, you've got reason on your side. When you present that to them, what do they say?
Well, the newest argument is it's a very popular kayaking destination and there's going to be kayakers all over the lake the bay at, you know, all hours of the day in October and November and December when we're going to be hunting it. And it's just not the case. I mean, it's a beautiful day up here right now and there's nobody kayaking out there. So I don't know where they're coming up with that. They raised the noise issue where, again, we're protected by law in the course of hunting.
So nothing that they tell you.
I mean, I'm a resort.
But they're not coming back with something that you're saying to yourself. They're like, oh, you know what? That is a reasonable point.
No, not really. They claim it's a safety issue. Yet, we had a fish and wildlife officer testify that there's been no incidents. He's never had to write a citation in 16 years. Blaine Police Department can't come up with a single instance of property damage or personal injury or anything resulting from hunting out there. I mean, I think really it is just that a lot of folks in the area are misinformed. They don't totally understand what's happening out on the water during hunting season. And that's why we were urging Whatcom County Council to at least give us the opportunity to maybe hold an open house, something like that, where we can talk with the public and explain we're not out there with rifles. We're not out there at 5 a.m. like you claim. It's dark at that time. You know, we're just trying to put some food on our family's table and do a little unique sea duck hunting while we still can out here.
Well, we wish you the absolute best of luck. How do people get more information and sign a petition if that's what they would like to do to show their support?
That'd be great. The petition is located at change.org, and you can go there and search for Washington Waterfowl Association, or they can go to waduck.org, waduck.org, to learn about our conservation work. And we do a lot of promotion of legislation in the interest of waterfowl and waterfowl hunting.
Again, waduck.org. Go to waduck.org. Learn more about this issue and other issues that are important to this community. Matt Berry is with the Whatcom County chapter of the Washington Waterfowl Association. Matt, thank you so much for spending some time with us this afternoon. And again, we wish you the absolute best of luck.
Thank you so much.
Absolutely. You've been listening to The Jason Rancho. Thank you so much for tuning in. Really do appreciate it. Hope you guys have a wonderful weekend.